you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Peak performers, thanks for joining us today. So far on the show, we've talked about some of the basics of health and wellness and performance. Recently, the technologies, some Chinese medicine. And let me just tell you, there's some cool stuff in store for 2022. And as much as I love the new technologies, I'm a big fan of going back to basics. And one of those is the fact that virtually every culture around the world recognized the existence of subtle energies, which are basically just energies that we can't measure with our current level of instrumentation. Probably the most well-known of which is the chakra system. Over the next two episodes, we're going to go from assuming zero knowledge of the chakras to understanding how the miracle workers of the planet achieve such spectacular results. No one understands this better than our guest this week, who has one foot firmly rooted in the objective, rational, and classical science model, while at the same time understanding spirituality at its deepest level. Cindy Dale is an internationally renowned author, speaker, intuitive energy healer, and professor of energy medicine. She has authored 28 books on energy healing, spirituality, and intuition, including the Bible of Energy Medicine, and winner of four internationally recognized publishers awards called The Subtle Body, an Encyclopedia of Your Energetic Anatomy, and also the largest consolidation of chakra knowledge ever produced called Llewellyn's Complete Book of Chakras. Her latest release, Energy Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Chronic Illness, was voted Best Holistic Book in 2020 by Book Authority and recently won the 2021 COVR Gold Medal Award in the Health and Healing category. You can find her on the socials at Cindy, spelled C-Y-N-D-I, Dale, D-A-L-E. And by the way, next week we'll be back with part two, which is a continuation and a more advanced discussion of her works. Grab a pen and paper and get ready to take notes on the merging of science and spirituality. Today, I've got Cindy Dale on the show. Cindy is an author, intuitive, and healer. Cindy, welcome to the show.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you. And this is going to be a show we talk about some of the esoteric side of things. Before, I believed in scientific materialism and that if it wasn't double-blind, placebo-controlled, then there was nothing else there. And as I started to see the unexplainable miracles, if you will, then I realized there's probably something else. So I dug into some of the ancient medicines, found they all had this framework in common, this framework of subtle energy. And so that will be the focus of our show today. But before we get started, let's start with a little warm-up. And what have you done? What non-negotiables or unusual things have you done for your health and performance today?
Well, I get up at 4 a.m. I do grab some black iced tea. That's non-negotiable. And I throw my dogs. They're two great big mangy 80-pound wolves, or they think they're wolves, in the morning, in the car, and we go to the dog park and we run around for about 45 minutes. So I do that absolutely every morning, or most of the mornings. And then I go have a little bit more iced tea. And you know what I do? I usually just typically get to work. This morning I had a nap, which I never ever do. And I'm like, wow, I must feel really relaxed about communicating with Nick today. So I kind of wonder when that happens, kind of what I'm going to be up to later in the afternoon or evening that's going to require a little bit of intelligence. So, but I always do that. And I take my vitamin C and, kind of take a couple moments to just gather myself before I turn on that computer.
And for our listeners, it's 10:40 over here. It is, I believe, 9:40 over there. And Cindy's already had a nap. So that goes to show that she's had a big day so far.
I know. That really hardly ever happens. But today, I think I have to give people permission. It's okay to take a break. It's okay to rest.
Living in New York City with ambition and energy around me, I need that reminder around the clock. In fact, I have multiple alarms scheduled in the evenings to prepare to wind myself down. Instead of alarms in the morning, like most people do, to me, it's more important to have alarms in the evening to prepare for like relaxation and sleep.
I understand that. That's good medicine. That's good energy. You know, I'm one of those people at a certain time, I'm non-negotiably just done. So none of my real friends try to get me after 7:30 at night. They know I'm not going to make any sense anyway, though I am kind of funny. I think I'm really funny if they get me then.
So how'd you settle on your routine of winding down around 7 p.m. and then getting up well before the sun?
First of all, I have always been a morning person. I love the dawn. I love being out and about and greeting the new day. And then there was a really practical reason too. I've been a single mother forever and ever. And my youngest son always had some kind of sports early in the morning.
Yes.
And it was my job to get him to school and exercise the dogs before I could do that. So as his schedule got earlier, so did mine. So I found out that there's a subversive world at the dog park that starts about 4:15, 4:30. There's people like me, kind of the strange ones, who are, you know, kind of early birds. And so you've got this whole routine, you know, who comes when, which dogs are going to play with which dogs. So then you can't get out of your slot. You can't go 15 minutes late or that German Shepherd attacks your dog. So there's a, you know, kind of a forced habit there.
Interesting. And you have the social accountability of knowing the schedules and specific time slots.
Well, isn't that about good health too? Like if you're going to be eating dinner with somebody who's a health nut, you're not going to be eating two pieces of the chocolate cake. You're just not going to.
Even if they don't say anything, it's just their presence.
Oh, they'll look at you.
Yeah, well, that too. So how'd you get involved with energy and more specifically subtle energy as one way it's called these days?
Yeah, I was really psychic or intuitive as a kid. So I still remember one evening, my bed was positioned so I could see any shadows from the kitchen on the hallway door. And I'm across from my parents. And I heard noises. We lived in Huntsville, Alabama, and there was a railroad track, you know, kind of cutting through the back of the yard. And I heard hobos, that's what we called, you know, those who rode the railways, come into the kitchen. I heard them. They were talking. Mm. The door slammed. They made breakfast. They chit-chatted. I remember what I didn't hear, too. I did not hear the sound of the fry pan getting washed. And in my 4 or 5-year-old brain, I'm like, oh, my gosh, my mom's going to be so mad they didn't do the dishes, because I heard them leave, too. So they left, and I ran into my parents' room and said, the hobos were in here. They were making breakfast. And my mother said, you're making things up, like she usually did. And my dad took my hand, took me to the kitchen and said, look, there's nothing here. It's just fine. So I didn't know what to call that. I had other types of awarenesses. I saw images, I saw pictures, I saw colors coming off people. And I didn't really know what was happening until I was in my 20s. And I took a class in energy, in healing. And I learned that what I was seeing were auric fields and chakras. And as the decades have gone on, and I've trained in different countries with shamans around the world, I have, you know, kind of like held myself accountable to those really early gifts. And I use them. I use them with clients. I teach about them. I keep studying the science of energy. And these days we call it subtle energy. When I was getting trained, it was psychic, then it was spiritual. And, you know, now we're trying to make it sound kind of more provable and call it subtle energy. But it's, you know, Nick, as you know, it's 99.999% of reality. It is reality. And so I think the more people who start to comprehend that the invisible is what's creating the visible, the better off we're all going to be.
What would you call that? Is that clairvoyance?
Yeah, it's clairvoyance. I was really clairvoyant as a kid, and I am when I do sessions with people too. Clairvoyance means clear seeing. And so it's about getting psychic images. Some people get them with their physical eyes, like they see the auras. I can see something sometimes with my physical eyes. Most of us are clairvoyant inside of our head and or in our dream life. And almost everybody gets some kind of clairvoyance, and you can cultivate it. These are abilities, clear seeing, clear sensing, clear feeling, clear knowing, clear predicting, clear hearing, whatever you want to call all the gifts. Everybody's got these gifts, but we tend to be stronger in certain of them other than others.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the other terms or names for energy or subtle energy?
Well, in different cultures, it's called by different terms. So in, you know, Hindu philosophy, sometimes it's called prana. In Qigong and different Asian medicines, maybe qi or ki. Or William Wright, kind of a scientist of decades ago, called it orgone. Honest to gosh, almost every culture labels subtle energy. Kundalini, we've heard of that, those of us who are acquainted with yoga. But basically, it is energy. Everything is energy. Energy is just information that vibrates. Everything vibrates. I remember studying that in ninth grade physical science. Yep. Brownian motion, basic vibrational medicine, you know, that we use in the healing arts. But now we've added the recognition that it's not just about what classical physics describes is, you know, atoms are vibrating and molecules are vibrating. Now we're aware that there's lots of different kinds of subatomic particles, some of which can actually move faster than the speed of light mm-hmm. because they don't have mass. We still believe that whatever doesn't have mass kind of stops at a certain barrier. But there's energies that can go faster than the speed of light, which makes them kind of instantaneous, or they can tell us what the future is going to be before we're even aware that we're asking the question. So subtle energy has expanded to encompass all that we can't explain. And we really don't even explain physical energy, which is more dense, very well either in science these days, I don't think.
So is subtle energy what creates a global coherence?
It is. It is the interconnectivity. So several years ago, a brilliant author, researcher, Lynn McTaggart, wrote a book about what she calls the field, which is this quantum field that interconnects all of us. And we're all part of everything. I mean, the ancients, like you talked about this when you began our discussion, the ancients, thousands and thousands of years ago, understood that we're part of everything and we're all interconnected. Subtle energy is our interconnectivity. It's why sometimes when your phone rings, you know who it's going to be, and you're not looking at your cheat sheets, right? Yeah. It's why you get up some mornings and you go, I don't know, something's going to happen today and I don't know what it is. I use it obviously with my clients, though I don't get every bit of knowledge. I get indicators using my intuition. Sometimes plain old common sense is smart to use too. With my oldest son, I use my kind of read the subtle energy in a really fun way with him and his partner of 8 years. My oldest son is kind of spooked about some of this stuff, but he's just fine if I tune in and I figure out what they need me to buy for them. Isn't that a hoot? So several years ago, I woke up and I was dreaming about a red, I don't even know how to say it because I don't cook, Breville, Breville waffle maker. Mm-hmm. I do not care about waffles or waffle makers. And I was like, what the heck? Why am I thinking of red Breville, you know, waffle makers? And I went on William Sonoma catalog and there's a red Breville waffle maker. So I bought it for Michael, my son, and his partner, sent it out there. About a week later, they text me like, did you buy this? I'm like, yeah. I don't know why. I just felt like you might need it or something. And they said, well, this is so spooky because a couple weeks ago, we were really wishing that we could buy it, but we couldn't afford it. So we've had this game for several years that mom just buys stuff. And they won't ever tell me what they need because they want to see if it's just going to appear in the mail. So, you know, you don't have to be in the field or be part of the oneness, you know, kind of just for serious reasons, like what kind of job should I get next or who should I send healing to? I think there's a lot of fun too in kind of have, you know, you can't screw it up. Just play with it. Just kind of see if you loosen up what you become apprised of.
Mm-hmm. Why hasn't this been accepted by Western society?
It's scary. I think it's really scary for Westerners. And 5,000, 10,000, et cetera, years ago, we used our neurology differently. In a really simplistic way, we actually have two sets of nerves or two ways of, you know, kind of interfacing with the world. Our oldest ancient way is called analog, and it's like the old-fashioned stuff I grew up in. Mm-hmm. It's very interconnected. You just sense what's happening. You're part of nature. You trust your intuition and your dreams. Nobody cared if you woke up with a dream. The whole tribe would pay attention to it, you know, or you tuned into animals. But becoming civilized, we started developing what's called the digital neurological system, which is straightforward, which is like ABC, don't mess with time. don't get out of logic. Don't get out of your schedule, this and that and the other thing. And so when we come from digital, we can have our tasks, you know, we have our roles in society. We know who's going to do what, but we become really frightened of what's inside of ourselves, the analog, the natural. We can't control it. We need to attune to it, not manage it. And I think if we're not raised with an okayness around that, we start to reject all of that, which I think is a culture Western society has been doing for hundreds, if not, you know, thousands of years.
And in the Western approach, a linear input should result in a linear output. It's very straightforward, easy to dissect, and you can reverse engineer it and figure out what that linear input was that caused the linear output. And it appeals to the simple, logical side.
It appeals to the logical side, and we think it's manageable and controllable. My youngest son has me use my energy techniques and intuitive insight sometimes to help him with his baseball career. And he's learned that even when you get an intuitive insight, you don't really know what it means in the present. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm drafted this year. Maybe it's next year. I remember I get dreams maybe every 6 months for him, like dreams that are just about him. Mm-hmm. And years and years and years ago, when he was about 16, 16 and a half, I got a dream that he made the majors as a baseball pitcher. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything because he's not really that good. I don't know how we're going to do this. His dad had sort of disappeared from the track of helping. And I'm like, I am so ill-equipped. And a few weeks later, my son came to me and he goes, Mom, I want to be a major league baseball pitcher. And I thought, well, we're going to have to figure this out. And I would get a series of dreams every so often that would show this is what could happen. That's a down thing. This is what's going to happen that you need to work for. But the thing is, it was always also work. Like I talked about that initial dream when I was teaching a class that had, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 people in it or something in Chicago. And I was saying, this is sometimes how we're offered, you know, tips about how to steer in our lives. And a young man came up to me during the break and he goes, I'm a baseball pitcher and I can coach him. And I know somebody else in Carolina who can too. And because I got the dream, because I said the dream, we got absolutely incredible coaching from these two brilliant young men. And so, you know, in the logical universe, we want proof and we don't want to have to work for it. We just want it to happen. You know, even when we get intuitions or we work with subtle energy, we want it to be predictable, but you don't always know. Kind of when you're following your intuition, when you're following where the field is leading you, where you're going kind of like in what feels right, you don't really know what's going to happen next or after that all the time.
And I think part of the problem is, I forget how long ago, but a couple hundred years ago, the Cartesian split occurred where the mind and body were identified as separate. And because of that, then the subtle energies were seen as religious, and science and religion shouldn't mix. And ever since then, there's been a perversiveness of science to accept subtle energies because it's seen as a merging of the two, which shouldn't be merged.
It's, and we're still undergoing that. And there's two pieces I want to add to that too. The original healers, you know, kind of in almost every culture, were called some version of the word shaman, and they were considered priest healers. The sense of oneness, the sense of spirit, the sense of spirituality or religion was combined with medicine. They were seen as integral to each other. And then I always find it quite amusing that Descartes, our father, so-called father of science, and, you know, kind of the empirical science terms that you have to test everything. In the beginning in our discussion, you talked about double-blind studies and all of this, which are sort of Descartes-like to, like, prove everything. The reason that he came up with his scientific rules of evidence was because he had a series of dreams. He was having a really tough time. And then he had these three dreams. I think they were all in one night. You know, there was like, he was pursued by darkness. He went into this library and he had to choose between, like, you know, this sort of spiritual book and kind of a more material kind of subject. He chose the spiritual because he was actually very poetic. And he left the library to go outside and the dark didn't pursue him anymore. And then from him, we get the laws of empirical science. And I'm like, hi.
Doesn't add up.
Well, Einstein, he napped. You know, he would just kind of turn it over to his unconscious mind when he had a question, and then boom, the answer would come. So if you really look at the inventors and the creators and the scientists, they dug deep into some sort of collective unconscious or their own collective unconscious in order to figure things out.
One other thing I found very surprising as I started digging into this whole world is that not only did virtually every culture around the world recognize the importance of subtle energy, but also many, like, the most highly regarded physicists and scientists in their respective domains also had a lot to say about this. And we hear quotes from these people like Einstein, but we'd never hear the ones about their views on energy.
No, they're cut out. And Einstein himself was one of those brilliant teachers who said, you know, everything is energy. He didn't say it exactly like that, though that's often interpreted, you know, as one of his statements. But he was basically saying that. He goes, all we really know, though, and all we believe in is density, the dense energy. But that's so very little of what all energy is. He truly believed that we would put this all together and be able to explain God, whatever, you know, he used the word God, you know, God and what scientific, and that that key is what these days we call subtle energy. Like, it's how everything is shared and how it's able to be continually transformed.
It's the mold from which everything else arises.
It absolutely is. And I like to tell people that subtle energy forms the lattice work. It forms the templates upon which subtle, you know, kind of upon which physical energies are formed or formulated. And, you know, even it's very interesting because even deep, deep, deep in the ocean, there are these bubbles of sound that we haven't heard, nobody's heard, I don't know if anybody's heard them for thousands, if not millions and millions of years. And they're organized in like lattice works. So everything comes from very, very basic sound and or light. And we as people, the same could be said of animals, of plants, maybe of ghosts and spirits, are nothing more than fields of light and sound. That's all we are. The skin is just a field. It's just a set of fields. So as soon as people can start to grasp that, yes, you have to deal with some of the fear. You don't begin and end at the skin. Stuff's coming in you all the time. You're out there inside of other people all the time. But how beautiful and magnificent that we're constantly exchanging ways of being and ideas and energies constantly too.
Talk a little bit about the difference between subtle energy and physical energy. You just mentioned physical energy, and just so the listeners get a good feel of what we're referring to in all this.
Well, at a very over and not quite true simplistic level, physical energy, you know, it's sort of like my tea here, you know, it's measurable. It tends to obey what we call the Newtonian laws, the laws of thermodynamics, the laws of classical science. Like it changes form, but you have to put energy in to do that. You know, a substance kind of loses energy as time goes on. So we've got certain ways that the physical energy, which is basically just measurable, tend to function. And it's important to acknowledge that, because some people get into this super psychic wild state and they go, well, I can jump off the cliff and fly. And really not, unless you've got wings. All right. So the world does operate in a band according to those rules of physical energy. Subtle energy really is just that which is at this point less measurable or immeasurable. It tends to move faster or slower than our tools and sometimes our senses know how to measure. But the truth is they're really not so very different. Though we talk about subtle energy with quantum physics, like once two people or particles have met, they're forever impacting each other, you know, or some of these wild rules, they're not really different. Like my body is physical, but it's also subtle. It's both. It's not one or the other. It's actually both. I was present when both my parents died, actually. My dad died over 25 years ago. I was in the room, and my mom died about 2 years ago when I was in the room. And when my dad died, I was in there with my sisters. I could feel him leaving his body. Like I felt it. My dad still existed when he stopped breathing. He was like a light at the end of the bed. And then when I would visit my stepmother, he was a light in the kitchen. I mean, You can't explain things like that, but that was my dad's subtle energy. When my mother died, my mother had a very strong willpower. She died when only my oldest son and myself were present. Now, what's important about that is for the 5 days before then, my sisters had come into town, other people were in town, and I had a couple hours before my mom passed, been told by a hospice nurse, you know, your mom's not going to go when these other people are in here. They're too frantic. They're too stressed out. She's not going to leave her body as long as they're in the room. And I said, well, maybe she's going to have to leave really soon, because they'd been there for days and days without break. And they'd finally taken a dinner break. So I'm there alone. I know my oldest son is coming. So I turn off the lights, play music that she would like. And it's a religious song that was like, good job, right? Was the message. My oldest son comes in. We're sitting across from each other. My mother smiles and she leaves. That was it.
Wow.
And I know she was still there. I could feel it. I also know she snuck out, right? Because, you know, when we're working with subtle energy, we're talking about consciousness. We're talking about the part of us that's more conscious. Like our physical body has consciousness, but most of the cells in our body are not inscripted with our own DNA. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just not. 78% is water. The rest of it, you know, 80-90% is like mainly bacteria. That's not really our consciousness. And do ourselves with D&E, even have our consciousness? I don't know. Think of it. Just go there. Like, we're just this mass of physical cells. So what's really keeping it together and running it? It's probably our consciousness, right? Something that is amassed from our subtle energies to some extent, not so much our physical energies. So I just like to think about some of these things because we can make it complicated or really simple. Like, there's a Cindy within the Cindy. And if I'm kind of going to be more that, I'm going to have a little more power in my life. I'm going to have a little bit more say about how I'm going to feel or what I'm going to do or not do.
Mm. You mentioned different places that consciousness can reside, whether in DNA or in the brain. There's also a theory I've read about consciousness residing in the human biofield. What is the human biofield?
I think it does reside there too. So let's go back to Newton, because he would really like to be recognized in our discussion. You know, he would agree that every molecule, every atom, every cell, every organ system gives off sound and electricity, electromagnetic activity, magnetic activity, so sound and light, mm-hmm. All right? So every single part of us is emanating sound and light. And yet there's other parts of us as well, inside and outside of the body, that are also giving off fields of energy. Like in my world, I often and most often work with the chakras. These are subtle organs that manage our subtle energies. They really interact with the physical organs, the physical self, you know, as well as, you know, the subtle self and our consciousness. We have channels through the body that actually have been, I believe, proven to exist. Some cultures are called meridians. In others, they're called nadis, N-A-D-I-S. And those emanate fields of sound and light. And we have fields given off of our fields. And so the human biofield, and there's plant biofields and animal biofields, that's really the sum total of all these fields of sound and light. Some of them are biological. Some of them come off of what we would call physical or more measurable parts of us. And some of them come, most of them come off of these more invisible, more subtle aspects of self. So the biofield is the sum total. And, you know, I am emphasizing it's not just humans. I mean, animals are very much like us. Other species have these same biofields. Plants function very similar to humans. The electricity that runs through them, the way that their chemistry works, they also give off biofields. And we've seen pictures of those biofields off of humans and of plants and animals as well. So our awareness, if you would, is also in our field. We just have to identify with it to make use of it. Like, what good is it to know that if you don't start to sense it? Sort of like you can walk into a room, and if you don't know how to switch on the light switch to make the electricity go on, you're going to be sitting in the dark. Mm-hmm. And most of us sit in the dark around our biofield.
And now there's technologies and tools that can measure and in some cases even diagnose based on the subtle human biofield and I guess general biofields.
Absolutely. We've got skin galvanization types of equipment. There's certain types of ultrasound, computer magnetic programs. It's going to be, that is the science of the future. It's the old science made new, because everything gives off sound and light. And when, for instance, Cindy's liver is healthy, there's going to be, certain sort of concerto, right? You could tune into, you know, or certain frequencies of sound or light that it's giving off. And everything makes sound, you know, like anybody can go on the internet and like everywhere you can download the sound of yeast cells, like they're kind of screeching. But that's how the body knows what they are. Interestingly enough, the body's immune system can't hear cancer cells. They can't detect cancer cells because cancer cells are really tricky. They invade the body. They, you know, kind of trick the body into believing that they're fetal tissue. Like literally that's what they're doing. So the body grows blood vessels into the cancerous tumor to feed that fetal tissue. That's what it seems like or sounds like or feels like. And the immune system can't hear the cancer cells, so it doesn't attack the cancer cells. So, you know, we can these days start to use nanotechnology or kind of put markers on cancer cells. We'll figure out how to shine them, you know, how to make them give off certain kinds of light or sound so the immune system can walk, walk to them, march, you know, get the marching orders going. But I think because of the Western fear of these things, science is really slow to call this type of science, energy medicine, real science. They're sort of just still playing with scalpels and x-ray machines, which is very rudimentary.
I tend to think of, when I think of the body finding a cell that needs to be either killed or recycled, that it uses a process of chemical identification and noticing the antigens on the top, on the cell surface, that kind of thing. But then I haven't really thought that much about how there could be a biophoton, like light or sound component to the body's like identification of an...
Yeah, cues, the cues. We're looking for cues. And biophotons, you know, photons are a unit of light. And, you know, biophotons are super, super, super small ones. And there's a subunit of sound also called phonons, P-H-O-N-O-N-S, that are created. Oh, it's so cool. Go research this stuff. This is sort of what I'm into right now, right? And, you know, every time your heart beats or there's pressure waves in the body, phonons stream, especially through like crystal lattice, you know, kind of organizations in the system, and they carry the major ideas you're holding inside of yourself. So very simplistically, if you're in a good mood, guess what's going to stream through your body with the phonons? Like supportive kind of energies. If you're in a bad mood or around really negative energy and you're not able to block that, those phonons are going to stream through the body and you will be less healthy. Your health at every level, psychological, physical, spiritual, will be compromised. So why not? Like, let's hopefully, if you scientists out there are listening to this, like, get going with some of these biophoton and phonon markers, because you can literally wipe out disease once you notice what's not tuned in and either tune it up, you know, or just eliminate those frequencies.
And how does this relate to some of the older scientists, like the work of, what's his name, Dr. Royal Raymond Rife?
Oh yeah, Royal Rife, amazing individual. So he lived in, you know, kind of in the 30s is when, 1930s is when he was doing a lot of his stuff. He invented a microscope, a universal microscope. Now there's only two of these in existence. I have seen one of them.
Wow.
I know, I'm like, I got bragging rights. I've actually seen and held some of his research manuals. They're huge. What he did is through his microscope, he would put different microbes on the slides, and then he would shine them with ultraviolet light. So he really worked with ultraviolet light. He believed that you could see the true, you know, kind of like reality of microbes if you were kind of like illuminating them with ultraviolet light. Then he would take other slides and send different refractions of light, different colors of light, kind of through these different lenses. So they go at 30 degrees, 60 degrees. It's very, very complicated. Though, you know, he had all these thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of, you know, illuminations. And when he would steer the light different ways, he noticed that he could, under certain conditions, turn, say, a lethal bacteria into a non-lethal bacteria. And vice versa. It was just a matter of shifting the energies that were hitting that bacteria would transform the bacteria or the virus or whatever the microbe was. His last experimentations were also revealing that he could shift certain viruses into bacteria or fungi. And his theory, which, where is the research on this? was that there's actually family of microbes, not so much here's our viruses, here's our fungi, and that includes yeast and mold, and here's our this, and we have other, you know, kind of like subunits. There's, you know, kind of really old, you know, sort of, you know, types of microbes that are called archaea and this kind of, right, et cetera. But his theory was that there's actually families that morph one into the other. Now, let's just play with that, just surmise. Maybe now we're dealing with, you know, SARS, different kinds of coronaviruses, right? We're dealing with COVID-19 and, you know, which is a virus that's got a single track of RNA inside of it, et cetera. Now, you know, so many people are getting what at one level they're calling long-term side effects. You know, they're becoming long haulers, or there's new terms every day about somebody who just, you know, can't shake the after effects of you know, COVID-19, of this SARS, particular SARS virus. Well, is it still that virus, or is there, certainly there's probably co-infections that got triggered, or perhaps the virus also morphs inside of the body and can have bacterial-like impact, or...
Oh, interesting.
I can't prove any of this.
Yeah. It's just a theory.
It's just a theory, but I do believe it's something we should be looking at based on research by theorists and scientists like Dr. Reif. We've stopped at germ theory. I do believe there's viruses that cause problems. I'm not throwing germ theory out of the window. I'm just saying maybe we need to expand if we're really going to help ourselves, given the day and age that we're in. Maybe we need to kind of extend our interpretation of what might be happening if we're really going to help the 30% of the people with something like a SARS virus actually get over what started as a SARS virus.
Well, clearly you're a wealth of information, a wide range of topics. Before we go on to some of the practical strategies and tips and tricks people can implement to improve their relationship with subtle energy, first, what's some of your background? You mentioned your childhood, but where did you go from there?
Well, from there, I became an English and philosophy major. Which
different.
I know. I really like literature and philosophy. I remember my first philosophy class. I was a freshman. My head hurt. I'm like, we don't think this way. Like, if that's this, then that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally would get headaches. And for some reason, I threw myself into an advanced philosophy class after taking a beginning. And I would sit there in Moorhead, Minnesota, in the college I was going to, with these other four guys, all wearing like tweed suit coats, right? And pipes, and they're philosophizing. And I'm like, I don't understand a thing they're saying. And my philosophy professor, after I turned in my first paper, said, you don't know what you're doing, but you're a natural at it. So I went on to work in public relations and business and all this kind of stuff. But I also, at the same time in my 20s, was developing my intuition and my gifts, traveling a lot, studying with shamans, studying with healers. And that sort of caught me by the time I was 28. It was like really all that I was wanting to do was study energy. We didn't call it energy back then. We called it psychic, right? Or healing. Yeah. And that's what I devoted myself to. But because I think I have the foundation in philosophy, I studied spiritual literature. I studied old cross-cultural belief systems. I would travel and come back with books that had ancient philosophies in them. I met with different shamans. I interviewed them. Eventually quantum physics took hold, and I studied as much quantum physics as I could. So I'm pretty well taught. And I self-taught, really. Well, I would say other taught, because I was always told what to learn. And somewhere around age 28, I had my first son, and I just heard a voice that told me, start your business. I'm like, which business? It was like, your intuitive healing business. I'm like, really? I have to make money at that? And it really just started. I was told to write a book. I wrote a book. It featured my 12 chakra system, which a lot of people now use a 12 chakra system. I was really the first one to put that together because I saw those chakras when I was a kid. So when I look back, I can see the path behind me. And I was one of these fortunate people who had a voice that would tell me every so often to go do this. So I just went and did it, because what are you going to say? You're not going to argue. You don't even really know who's talking to you. But it made sense, so I did it.
And that's led to how many books now?
I think it's 28. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was overwhelmed when I was looking through all the books you've written. Hard to do my homework for this episode.
I know. Some of them didn't do very well. But what's funny about that is, like, one of them did not sell really well. Neither did its, you know, kind of children books. It was called Advanced Chakra Healing. It came out about 15 years ago, but then it became like a cult classic. It was something like $150 on Amazon. I'm like, why aren't I selling the boxes sitting in my basement? And I got the rights back a couple years ago, and it's going to be reissued again in late 2021. And I'm pretty excited about it, because the data in it, I'm now teaching with places like the Shift Network. I'm able to pull pieces of it. So nothing's lost. Yeah. Though I was so depressed when the publishing company that came out with it and some other books kind of went under, and the books were transferred to Random House, which never sold them. I was like, well, that was a wasted few years. But nothing's ever wasted. You just don't really know where it's going.
Yeah. Only time will tell. Let's get into some of the nuts and bolts now. So if I recognize that I want to become more subtle, energetically aware, where do I go from here?
So I would suggest that you kind of find a place within your body to kind of ride around for life. In terms of the chakras or the subtle energy organs, the one that serves as what we call the center for most of us is in the heart area. Some of that's because the physical heart gives off more electricity, more magnetism, more sound than any other organ in the body. And so the chakra that is encompassing of the heart is in the center of the chest. So start to just give yourself permission to, you know, sort of like a Joey, the baby kangaroo, to like start riding around in your life and your heart, and give yourself permission to sense reality from that place. And that energy field, measurable one, goes way out beyond your skin. You're going to start to naturally notice what other people are feeling, how you feel about what's happening in nature, or how somebody's impacting you who's, you know, kind of like you're not necessarily connected with. And you're going to start to notice too that your intuition is going to get a little stronger. So develop your intuition. Before you go into a grocery store, sit down, breathe into your heart, feel your feet. That's called grounding. It's very simple. And just, you know, let yourself maybe get an image of which fruit should you buy, right? What fruit does your body want you to buy? Maybe see if there is a verbal message that pops in around that. Maybe it's on the radio. I don't know what song is going to tell you what fruit to buy, but whatever. Coca-Bana, coconuts, I don't know. But, you know, or see if there's like a poem that comes in, or a picture in your head of a grocery list, you know, and one of the fruit is highlighted. Or when you go in the grocery store, like, well, you can't probably touch all the fruit, that sort of spreads germs, but, you know, but put your hand near different fruit and see which one gives you an up feeling versus a down feeling in your body. I do not believe we're supposed to separate the fact that 99.9% of us is subtle energy from our everyday lives. So use these very simple tools and start to make decisions based on them.
I discovered using a pendulum this year, and I was extremely skeptical. Actually, I bought it to prove that it didn't work. And you hold it straight, and you put it over certain foods. I mean, that's one way you can use it. And depending on whether or not it's right for your body, it spins one way, or if it's a bad choice, it spins the opposite way. And how big the circles are how strongly it's good or bad for you. And I got it and tried it a few times and was blown away that it actually made a difference. And I don't do well with peanuts. And I put it over certain fruits and vegetables, and it said that they were good for me. Then I put it over the peanuts and it said it was strongly bad for me. And I didn't believe it. My partner didn't believe it. I invited her in and I had her try it to show that I wasn't actually like using my hand to spin it around. I was just holding my hand straight and it worked for her as well. So there's something there that even like the skeptics can try for themselves.
Yeah. And I actually have a pendulum right here. That's why I was reaching. It's not hard, you know, and you know, you can, you know, kind of like all you're doing is measuring like a vortex, an energy field. So here that's showing that my hand chakra, which is an extension of the heart, is really open right now, you know, but let me, I'm going to think about a negative thought and like, watch, look at me shut down. Like I'm just thinking of a negative thought about myself. Before it was going clockwise. Now I'm going to try to believe that that thought is true. And look, it goes the opposite direction.
And for listeners, she's holding a pendant up and she's demonstrating how it works. And
exactly.
Although it looks like she's probably using her hand to spin it around, she's not.
She's not. Yeah, that's right. Some people can only hear us. Yeah, anything works. And, you know, kind of any kind of a weight on a string, you know, or a necklace, you can, you know, kind of get a test of what's yes and what's no, like maybe on your hand or on over a food or over a statement that you've written on paper, you know, and just for yourself, get a sense of yes, no, or maybe. Then you have to come up with another question.
And what else? We mentioned, you mentioned to me in a previous conversation that you can use boundary setting and that interfaces with subtle energies.
Yeah. And most of us are acquainted with the need for boundaries. So we think of boundaries typically as psychological or physical, and they are. So physical boundaries, you know, are going to include not sitting next to somebody who doesn't like you, right?
You,
why go through that? Or psychological boundaries have to do when somebody's telling you mean things about yourself, changing what they're saying, deciding you're not going to take it in, you're not going to believe that, you're going to meet what's, you know, kind of mean with something loving, or you're just going to leave the room if you can, or whatever it is. But there are also subtle boundaries. And these are probably, you know, equally, if not more important to know how to set as physical and psychological, because subtle predicts physical. Subtle establishes what's going to happen in the physical world. And so it's very important to tune into that heart chakra and what we called earlier, your biofield, and have a sense of how extended you are, but you don't want to go too far. Like if you feel like, you know, you're literally in somebody else's biofield, or you're starting to over-relate to their feelings or emotions and feeling them for them, bring yourself back in. Use decision-making inside yourself to say, those aren't my emotions. I'm not going to own those. I'm not going to feel those. I'm going to feel my feelings. I'm going to do this instead. So it takes quite a bit of practice, but it's so important for having a joyful life to be able to learn how to make a decision about what subtle energies in you or around you're going to pay attention to and which ones you're going to negate or transform.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that you're clairvoyant and everyone has some of each of the different types. What are the four different types and how do you go about identifying which you are?
Well, I'll give you some clues. There are people who are mainly physically empathic, and physically empathic people tend to feel what's happening for themselves, but also others, like in the environment or people or animals in their physical body. They sense what's happening in their body. Maybe they're sitting next to somebody who has a knee pain and they feel the knee pain in their own body, and or they record other emotions in their body. So, oh, I just know my, you know, my sibling is sad. I can feel it. Or, you know, you're sad because you can feel it. So those are really body-based people. There's also spiritually empathic people. It's tough to be one of them because that's sort of knowing in a higher sense. So spiritually empathic people just have awarenesses. They're the people go, I know that person's lying. I don't know how I know, but I know they're lying. Or I think that person's in the wrong job and I can't prove it, but I'm aware of it. So they're higher awarenesses. So you have to practice believing yourself. There are clairvoyants. audience people. These are verbally intuitive people where you get messages that are more verbal. And it can be from the environment. Maybe you hear a song on the radio that means something. And it's like, that's an answer to a question you were reflecting. Or you get words that pop in your mind, or songs that pop in your mind, or, you know, poems or lyrics that give you senses of things, and, or just words, but, you know, people you can see or not see talking to you in your head. And then there's clairvoyance, which is visually intuition oriented people, and you get images. Now, you might see them with your eyes. That billboard tells you exactly what you need to know. Or you know, kind of like see something out of the corner of your eye and there it is. Like there's that book on the shelf in a bookstore and you're going to buy that book now. Some people get hit by those books. I have a lot of people who buy my books because they get hit on the head with them, which is physically empathic, by the way. Or you get dreams or whatever it is. One of my youngest son is visually intuitive. And he gets signs from the environment that are visual. Like one day he was asking a question. He basically saw the same license plate three times. Different letters, but they all said, do it. All right. Wow. And not too long ago, he was wondering if he should leave the school he was at. And he goes, Mom, will you get a sign for me? I'm really, really, I don't know. And I'm getting gas. I'm in Fargo, North Dakota. I'm getting gas and I'm going to head over to the baseball field. Right in front of me is a truck. Now, no kidding. I got the indication the way he would believe it. In the back of the truck, there's a sign with his freaking name, Gabriel. Like his name is on it. Like his name, big letters, right? And the license plate was, you know, spelled kind of funny, but it was leave. And I'm like, well, how can you not leave? He was so scared. He had a tough season. He had COVID in his back. Who's going to want me? Because he couldn't pitch a few innings very well. He had full ride offers within 2 weeks of leaving. So, but you have to trust your intuition too.
That's
right?
The hard part.
That's the hard part. That's the tough part.
That's a good example.
I have great stories.
Yeah, I can tell. And do you recommend people lean into their strongest type or they work on developing their weak ones?
I'd say both. Lean into your strongest, get to know it. It's your backup. It's your fundamental. You lead with it. I think it's very helpful to develop your weaker ones too, because sometimes maybe for one reason or another, your lead intuitive skill isn't going to tell you something. Or you're going to doubt it and you're going to want to test it. Mm-hmm. And you can test it with your weaker ways of knowing.
I see. Really quickly, can you touch on a couple ways of strengthening and cultivating each of the four?
Sure. Well, the physical empathic is believe what you sense in your body, believe the emotions, and believe the sensations, the physical sensations. But ask a question. When you get like that knee pain or you're just filled with anger or whatever it is this mine or not? And if you get the sense or a word in your head that says most of it is not yours, you know, cleanse it, use like quite, you know, white light or, you know, get a sense of your spiritual guidance or your own spirit. Ask whatever energy is not yours to be cleansed, you know, and then work with whatever it is left. If you're more spiritually empathic, you really just have to trust your sense of things. You've got to hang in there. You've got to go, I don't know why I know it, but this is true. Don't necessarily argue with people because say you do know somebody was the one who embezzled funds from the business. If you don't have the proof, you're not going to prove it. Yeah. But believe yourself. And with the clairaudience, again, you know, kind of make use of it. Test yourself. Ask for words. Ask that your inner spirit, whatever you believe in, spiritual allies, higher power, to give you words, to give you indicators. And do the same with your psychic visions. Like say, I want a picture about this. I'm going to close my eyes and see what color I get. Look up colors, see what they mean. If you're more of the physical, empathic kind of person or spiritual, you can also ask for signs from the environment. You know, like I want a sign within the day. And then if you see three eagles, go Google eagle. What's the spiritual meaning of eagle? And take in what it means. So have fun with these ways of being.
It's a good lesson.
It is.
Cindy, we've been going for a while. We're going to start to wind down. But before we do, where can people find you, your books, your work, and connect?
Very easy. Everything's on my website, cindydale.com, CYNDIDALE.com. I've got some great Shift Network classes, my own classes, other people, you know, kind of who offer sessions too, besides me, just because I book out, you know, quite a ways. And so everything's really on the you know, website. Sign up for the newsletter and we'll let you know what's up too.
Perfect. All right, on to a question that I ask all guests, and I love to see the wide-ranging answers. Imagine that there's a worldwide burning of the books and all information on earth is gone. You get to save the works of any three teachers, any types of works. It can be books, podcasts, YouTube videos, anything you want. Who would you choose and why?
All right. Well, I'm a book gal. All right. So first, I'm going to pick the biggest book that has the most data I like, Manly Hall's book, The Secret Teachings of the Ages. He's got everything in there about energy that you could ever hope. And I think there's medicines in there, so energy medicine, so and everything about the planet. So I'd go with Manly Hall.
Amazing.
I was an English major, so I'm going to also pick the collective works of Shakespeare because I think he describes everything there is psychological for us to know. So I've covered sort of energy slash physical, and then I've got Shakespeare. And, you know, then I don't know. I'm either going to go between Grey's Anatomy, so I go pure physical, or I'm going to do the Bible, not because of the religious pieces, but because I think the spiritual truths all are in there. But I'm probably going to pick the Bible because you got to flesh out and there'd be the spiritual component to it.
I think that's been the most often recommended book, most often saved book on this show. Yeah,
I would think so.
Okay. Well, now we'll go on to the lightning round for some rapid fire answers. What's the best or worst advice you've ever received?
The best advice, zero tolerance of abuse. Took me forever to get that one. All right. The worst was my dad's, just be a good girl. It doesn't get you very far. Mannerly.
Yeah.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah. It can be interpreted different ways though.
Yes, it can.
What are you most interested in researching these days?
Oh gosh. I love researching. I'm really into light. I'm really into looking at what science is calling scalar waves. There's three different kinds, by the way, so far. Absolute light, virtual light. I'm really trying to like get into like what are the different kinds of light that make up reality.
Okay. What's the number one thing that you believe that virtually no one else does?
I don't believe you have to meditate. Now, in my world, everybody meditates, right? I run the dogs.
Oh, I see.
So, see what I mean? I don't think you have to do it like the right way. Some of us can't. We're not good at it.
It's interesting. And I guess we'll have to have a follow-up episode where we discuss all things chakras and energy and light healing, because that's some of the more advanced concepts. But I'm surprised that you don't do any of those chakra balancing meditations, like dedicated meditations.
I don't, which is probably illegal if you do what I do for a living.
That's a well-kept secret. It kind of destroys one of the other questions I was about to ask you. I was going to ask what's something that your tribe doesn't know about you, but
they probably don't know that either.
Yeah.
They also don't know I really like detective novels. I love Jack Reacher, Mitch Rapp, Harry Bosch. I like books where the world is saved absolutely every episode or by the end of the book.
Mm. It's a nice way to leave things.
It is. Yeah. Tidied up. And then it goes to mess, but then you tidy it up again.
Mm-hmm. How would you like to conclude our first episode together?
Well, you know what? This was great fun. Thank you for like being who you are. I don't know. I think the best conclusion is really to just thank you for being on the cutting edge, for taking risks, for bringing people together. I think you need a big thank you. So thank you, Nick.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, your work, and like I was saying a minute ago, we'll have to do a round two to explore some of the more in-depth concepts that we barely scratched the surface on today.
We will. We'll go more esoteric and practical at the same time.
Perfect. Well, I'm Nick Urban, here with Cindy Dale, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.